Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch! Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Welcome in to 11 Personnel. Big voice Nick Roush here, ready to bring you a broadcasting good time with my partner Adam Luckett. And I'll stop any given moment. Just cut me off, please. I don't know.
You're done?
Yeah. I'm done. Well, here's the thing, Luckett. Well, baby Roush is asleep and he's very sniffly. I don't know if it's the snowflakes. He just immediately was just like, I'm going to be sniffly. So, like, I've got a lot of energy right now, but I don't want it to be very loud energy. I can project it, but I don't want it to shake the whole damn house. So if I do temper my voice, it's because I don't want Sick Baby to wake up, because last night he did the thing where after writing about another Kentucky basketball loss around midnight, he woke up as soon as I finished brushing my teeth to go to bed. And it was just like, oh, so I'm not going to sleep much tonight. There goes.
Well, that's the game we're playing.
Yeah, so
at least it was early tip, though.
Yeah, thank God.
Got it out of the way.
Yeah, but nevertheless, we were ready to rock and roll. We're ready to podcast. We got an SEC schedule release show, and man, the network execs, they have perfected the art of milking the teat of a schedule release.
They like to make you earn it. I guess that's the point of the network. Which they kind of picked the wrong day, because there was a lot going on.
Well,
today,
I mean, yes, at one point, but on another, you just had, like, I had SEC Network on from noon until I turned it off when I finally heard what's his name singing, Kyle Paul,
Taylor Hicks, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I can only do so much of that. But yeah, so they put out a schedule right after Tennessee's intro press conference, and similar to the last schedule party we got, Luckett, they went week by week. And the thing that, I mean, that part doesn't bother me, particularly last time around when they completely, you know, reconfigured the schedules. It was a 10-game all SEC schedule. The part that bothered me is how much time they spent talking about non-conference games that we already had dates for. The whole point of the schedule release was to give us dates of conference games. And not only were they talking about that on their show, it was on the ticker who was playing, you know, I forget, Auburn's playing at Penn State, you know, like Alabama, Miami. And it's like, we've known for a long time. That is not new. And yet that's what they're talking about. They were even talking about it in the halftime of some crappy SEC basketball game that was on tonight.
They have their talking points just like anybody in media, so you gotta hit the talking points. And man, so Clemson, Georgia is, I mean, it's what we're gonna hear about all offseason is that game. Which, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, that's an awesome week one Saturday night game. Like, everybody's gonna watch it. It really doesn't mean all that much big picture, but it's kind of cool to see those two brands kind of at the peak of their powers going at it. So I get it, but yeah, it just, they can go in the same circle. I didn't watch it, but I'm gonna ask you a question. Did they talk about the college football? How much do they talk about the college football playoff out on in January on a schedule release show?
So I saw people complaining about it, but I guess my hamster wheels were turning so much that I tuned out enough to where I didn't catch it. But I saw, like, that Brandon Marcello guy complaining about it, and it didn't cross my mind. Now, that's because I was busy, like, oh, well, what does this mean? What does that mean? And then when they were really dragging their feet on the first week, like, we only got one new game time announced in the first 15 minutes of the show. Like it. So yeah. I was like looking up Senior Bowl videos of Drake Jackson during that time. So I wasn't paying too close of attention. But I did see that there were some folks who were like, oh, playoff, blah, 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 blah. I just, Chris Doering had his AirPods in and it was horrible audio quality. And they keep calling him CD. And every time I hear that, I just think of CD's nuts. Like, you can't have the nickname CD and be on television. You just can't.
Yeah. You know, it's TV. You gotta plug what the boss may want you to plug, I guess. But as far as scheduling goes, I think from Kentucky's point of view, I mean, I really like how the thing breaks out. Yeah. And we got some tweaks.
Yeah. Yeah. Not the usuals. Mississippi State is later than normal.
If you go back to last year, that Mississippi State game was supposed to be November 17th originally,
mm-hmm.
before COVID happened. So maybe this is kind of a change they're getting into. They're going to give Kentucky Mississippi State later in the year and move the Missouri game up, which is what we saw this year with Missouri in week two.
Yes, that is where Florida was the last time we got in the schedule rotation, was that second game of the season. Now it's Missouri, sandwiched in between a couple of cupcakes, with Terry Bowden and Chattanooga, which I like the fact that we're actually going to be able to scout Chattanooga this spring. They're playing spring football.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're one of the FCS teams playing spring ball. Yes. Yeah. So, I will watch some of that for sure.
And every time I hear the word mocks, I'm going to think of Mox from Varsity Blues.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Mox?
Yeah. great movie.
Oh. One of the – I mean, obviously it's very –
I try to watch that before football season every year.
Really? That's on your regular kind of –
it's like – it's kind of like a kickoff to football season. Watch that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how – like – Not Another Teen Movie did kind of ruin some of it for me, but when that thing came out and you got to watch, like, because we weren't supposed to watch it, at least, and when you did get to watch it at a young age, it was like, oh man, I'm getting away with something.
Yeah, yeah. But that movie, like the football scenes, I think they did a good job on those. Yeah, like, yeah. Those for the time they made it, and I think still to this day, it's still like, it's not like super bad.
Right, right. The especially compared to some football move, like the Blind Side, right. When he's blocking, yes. The guy all the way down the field, that's just terrible.
Yeah.
But the one thing about Varsity Blues, the steal and the cop, like they took things just maybe a little bit, you know, they really stretched reality with like stealing a cop car, going to a strip club, and the teacher who teaches the sex ed is the stripper. Like, come on. That's just, but you know, MTV. So they sell tickets, yeah. Man.
Still, I still love it. I still think it's a great movie. Great for what it is.
Tweeter's the best guy in that movie.
Yeah.
Him, yeah. And the dad, Mox's dad, is just a great, yeah. Character. It's great. Yeah. But, oh hell, I don't even know what we're talking about.
Kentucky schedule, the mocks, Chattanooga.
But the thing is, like, it is, aside from that gauntlet in the middle where you go to South Carolina to start things up, and then it's Florida, LSU at home, go to Georgia. Everything else is really nice spots. And with LSU, they're playing Auburn first, and then that they go to Kentucky, and then they play Florida. So you get them in a sandwich spot. I don't,
mm-hmm.
And also you get that gauntlet in October. And if we know anything about SEC scheduling, they always give Kentucky home games in October.
Right. You're going to get those. Yeah, that's a good point. They're going to get both those games at night. Or hopefully you won't have to worry about a day game there. Obviously atmosphere will be better. But when I look at it, Nick, I look at the schedule in this way. You really have four games on the slate that are very winnable games for Kentucky, games we expect them probably to win, and they have cushion built around them. You got ULM the week before Missouri. You got Chattanooga the week before South Carolina. You got a bye the week before Mississippi State. You got New Mexico State a week before Louisville. So you've kind of got a situation set up where it's not a bye week on some of these, but it kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
To prepare for these games. And if you can take care of all those that I just named, you beat ULM in Missouri, that's two wins. You beat Chattanooga, South Carolina, that's four. You take care of Mississippi State off the bye, that's five. You beat New Mexico State, Louisville, that's seven wins, and you still got Vanderbilt on the schedule. You know, like they're just it's easy to walk through this and see them getting to nine wins.
Yeah, and it's just stealing a couple here and there. Now, the one that I think is my favorite development that won't get talked about that much is the bye before Mississippi State. I mean, Kentucky hasn't won there in 2008. You know, we talk about in here the house of horrors that is Starkville. And no matter how bad Kentucky beat them last year, that those damn cowbells, there's just something about them.
Yeah.
And being able to win that game regularly, you can't take it for granted. Just like we kind of took the Missouri
important game,
game for granted a little bit last year. So I'm glad you started there because, you know, obviously everybody's mind goes directly to that three-game stretch in the middle of it. And you know, when you look at that three-game stretch now, like this is us being optimistic. You know, I think the way Jeff Drummond put it from over at Cats Illustrated, he's like, yeah, going into last season, we all kind of marked Missouri as a win. And what was the other one? And Ole Miss as a win.
I didn't.
Yeah, you were alone in that, but none of us had Kentucky winning at Tennessee, except maybe – I think you actually – you didn't have that, did you?
Yeah, I did. I did miss on the Ole Miss one, obviously, but everybody missed on. And what was the other one I missed on?
You had us beat.
But Georgia. I also caught them to beat Georgia. That was like my upset pick.
Right, right. But like when we do this, obviously things can change. Kentucky's got a new offensive coordinator. If it's a disaster, all of our optimism now is just out the wayside. But this is like our – we kind of think things are going to go in this direction. Obviously, there can be injuries. They can slip up at some point and drop. And Mississippi State feels like the traditional game you shouldn't lose. But if you take care of business, which Mark Stoops has done a pretty good job of beating teams he's supposed to, they played Florida really close at the Krogue the last few years. You know,
they're getting one of Florida LSU. Like, they're going to win one of those games, I think.
I mean, especially but that Mississippi State game, getting that new everybody coming in, like.
Mm-hmm. But I worry that Mississippi State. That's just tricky. That's a tricky spot for that game. And in 2017, it set up like this too, where they had a bye, went to Mississippi State, and got their doors blown off.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's a tricky spot, obviously. I love the New Mexico State. I love having that cushion before the Louisville game, before the rivalry. I think it's played out very well for Kentucky in the past. They had it in 2016 when they went and beat Lamar. They didn't have it in 2017, and they really weren't ready for that game when Lamar came to Kroger Field and blew them out.
Middle Tennessee made sure that they were awake, you know, that they couldn't sleepwalk through that game, even though they could have if they wanted to in 18.
And then in 19, UT Martin, I think it helped Kentucky kind of get ready for the Louisville game the week prior. I just think it's – and in 2014, I think they had the bye week. And then they came out and almost pulled up an upset as a dog. So I just think it's really helped them in the past to get ready for that game, especially with how important that game is and how much emphasis I think they put on that one week when they play them. So I wish they could do that every year. I know sometimes SEC is trying to get at least some of their teams to play, you know, some games that day, but I really like when Kentucky has that little cushion right there before they go and play Louisville.
You mean go and beat Louisville?
Right.
You misspoke there. Yeah.
We get the ACC schedule tomorrow, I think. So we'll get to see how Louisville's breaks out.
There is one other, I guess, caveat too to all of this is that, you know, we have no idea what stadiums are going to look like. I mean,
we're all just hoping for the best right now.
Right, right. But if things do get to, like, let's say, I don't know, 75% or something, or I have no idea how they're going to handle this, where you got some people vaccinated, some people aren't. That's a topic for another day that I don't even want to try to get into. But like, let's just imagine that this is a normal situation. Wouldn't it be great to break into normalcy with 5 Kentucky football home games out of the first 6 to open the season? And your road trip is Columbia, South Carolina.
I am ready for that first Kroger Field beer. I don't know about everybody else, but I cannot wait.
Against Rich Rod too.
Yeah. I cannot wait to do that. And then this is what you dream about as a home schedule, as a Kentucky fan. And this home schedule was supposed to have Louisville on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's about as good as you can ask for, man. This is a great home schedule. And then it blends in with a road schedule that's very manageable.
Well, and I do
Kentucky could be favored in road games except the trip to Georgia. Like, that's certainly on the table.
Yeah, you're right. I was to say maybe South Carolina, but no. Who the hell knows what Mississippi State's going to be, but yeah, you're exactly right. And I do like that, even though Louisville is down now, and we can say that, I like that they have flipped that where it kind of balances out the schedule a little bit better. With Louisville and Georgia, kind of your bigger games being opposite of Tennessee, Florida, where it's not all just kind of, you know, packed into one year.
Yeah. And I think it sets up well. You've heard me talk about, you know, the end of the season is so important because they remember the bowl game. And they remember what you did in November when projecting out the next season, which is really the majority of the calendar. So I think it sets up well for them to end it on a high note, end on a winning streak.
Well, and you can also start on a win streak too, and you get a bunch of, you know, kind of artificial momentum. Like,
yeah. Well, that's why that 3-game stretch, it's really about what you do in the bookends. If you take care of business in the bookends, mm-hmm. but that 3-game stretch is really house money.
And not to go back to the basketball game, but look what Alabama did. Their fans aren't going to remember how terrible they were against Kentucky in between. They were great at the start of the game. They were great at the end of the game. And you know what? It was good enough to call it a win. If you do, if you're great in September and November in this schedule, 9-win season.
Nine wins is certainly on the table. And I think in our prognostications, we know Kentucky is rebuilding. Like, there's huge offensive questions. But Missouri just lost their three best defensive players and their second leading rusher in program history.
Mm-hmm.
They have questions and a new defensive coordinator. South Carolina's got a new staff. Shane Beamer can't keep people there in Columbia. Their running backs coach just left this week.
I will say it was a nice little splashy hire for Drinkwitz to get the guy who used to be the Cardinals head coach, right?
Yeah, and he was a Browns defensive coordinator with Freddie Kitchens last year. His name's escaping me right now.
Bricks or something like that. But I saw that name and I was like, oh, yeah, I know who you're talking. I've heard that name
he's before. Been all over the place.
Right.
Steve Wilks.
Wilks, there we go.
That's an interesting – I thought that was an interesting hire.
I liked him better when he was working with Jerry Springer. His show broke off, wasn't
that, it? That is the same name, ain't it?
It's a Wilkos, which, my God.
That's right.
There was a couple of guys in our fraternity. One of them I still actually know, but the other guy, I've never seen him since. They were big fans of left-handed cigarettes, and they would just, like, skip class to watch Wilkos all day. It's like, guys, like, you can watch trash TV forever. You're really just going to skip college to do nothing and watch Wilkos? Come on.
Everyone has their vice.
They were addicted to it.
Everyone does.
But you know, today we'll get to it more, but the other teams, they were falling apart. Tennessee, they're ready to win now, according to Danny White, freaking prick. What the hell is going on at Mississippi State? We don't know. No idea. You want to talk about turnover.
Rodgers is good. They kind of figured out some stuff at the end of the season. And Arnett's still there. I was hoping he would get out of there.
Yeah, yeah.
But so that's the game I think is going to be tougher than people are going to realize. That's my prediction.
But when you look at as far as continuity and I mean, Urban, he's losing some guys too. Not Urban, Mullen, excuse me.
Yeah, they're losing a lot.
Get my sore losers, not only from a talent perspective, but from a coaching perspective too. I saw where they had a guy going to the Jets. Garrick McGee was the name of the pass I'd heard in a while. He's now their receivers coach, former UofL guy. And then who did Coach O go and get at LSU? Did he go and get Freeman?
No, Freeman picked Notre Dame over LSU.
Okay.
Then O tried to hire Ryan Nielsen, who played for him at USC and is the Saints defensive line coach. But there was kind of a contract negotiation thing there with Sean Payton, and the Saints were able to keep him. And then he went and got he's hired. His name's escaping me.
I know they got the
back coach for the Vikings.
Oh, wow. Okay. I know but, offensively he, they got the guy who was holding Joe Brady's dipstick cup, and they were like, oh, well, he's got to be worth something.
This guy for the Vikings, he worked with Dave Aranda at Wisconsin, who was their coordinator last year.
Gotcha.
So that was kind of the connection there. But really, Orgeron on his coordinator hires, he's just banking on the Joe Brady and Aranda magic with guys that work with him in the past. We'll see if it works.
Yeah. And that one kid, that lefty quarterback was pretty good.
He's a guy that people are going to talk up. I don't know if he's all that great.
He had a great game at Florida.
Yeah. There was a lot. There was some coverage busts and stuff like that. But he's a guy like thrown. I think people may be getting a little – him and Bazelak are two guys this offseason that I think are going to kind of get overhyped. That I'm upset that I'm going to hit the brakes on a little bit. I need to see a little bit more. They have talent though. I mean, they've top five recruiting class every year, so there's plenty of options over there. But yeah, it's a unique spot they're in for sure. Them and Florida both, I think.
Yeah, and the one that we have not talked about, I feel like we've talked about it a lot elsewhere, but not on this podcast. And man, it's kind of weird. Like, have you noticed that a lot of coaches don't want to be on Scott Satterfield's staff anymore at Louisville?
Yeah, that should not be a surprise when you try to do the little shuffle he did there with South Carolina.
Yeah, really?
The signs are just there, Nick. And, like, I think we're going to look back, and we should have known after that game the L's down. Like, that was kind of a glaring sign. Does this guy know, like, does he know, like, what this job is? That was, and you've seen players opting out, and the comments he made about players opting out, and then the comments he made about the players, how it's harder on coaches because they have families or whatnot. I mean, there's some moments here where you're going to look back and be like, oh, yeah, he hit some checkpoints that we just really weren't paying attention.
Well, here's the thing, like, that bothers me most about it, and the one we're most recently referring to is the Dwayne Ledford leaving. Was he their offensive coordinator or just offensive line coach?
Yeah, by name.
Yeah, so.
Title.
Right. He takes a job to work with Arthur Clark at the Atlanta Falcons. It's going to be their offensive line coach. And he is now the only guy they have left is Gunter Brewer. And if y'all don't know who that is, he's the old man that wears flat bills in all the recruiting pictures. He's hilarious. Just is a caricature. He's a funny looking person. I don't know anything about him other than, oh my God, look at that guy. But he's the only offensive staffer they have left. Everybody else is bolted. And now, if, like, in a one-off situation, you can explain away some of these departures, like, okay, well, the running backs coach, Norval McKenzie, his buddy, Clark Lee, is now the head coach at Vanderbilt. He was his fullback in college. Okay, mm-hmm. You can explain that. Wedford coached Arthur Clark in North Carolina. There's a connection there. You know, why not go to the NFL? Frank Ponce, he was at App State for a very long time. Now he can be an offensive coordinator in title. Like, individually, like, I can explain away one of them. But the part that kills me with all of the honks over there at UofL is all of those guys, they've been through this time and time again. And the fact that they aren't sounding the alarms just shows, like, how little they care about actually, like they're willing to carry water as far as it'll take them.
Yeah. The lack of reaction from Ledford was
shocking. Because it's fair to say that he was Satterfield's Vince Mero. Like, he was the most popular assistant on that staff.
Yeah, he was the best assistant on staff too. Like, I think he's one of the better offensive line coaches in the country, which shows why the Falcons will want him at the next level. But you look at him, Satterfield, Frank Ponce, Ledford didn't come from App State. He used to work at App State, but didn't. They lost a linebacker coach who went back to App State to be the defensive coordinator. So they just lost some guys already in that staff. They've had to do some shuffling. Defensive coordinator, they got better last year. But like I've said previously on this podcast, their defense really has to take a jump up next year. If they don't, they're going to be in big trouble.
Because they've lost some offensively. I mean,
they've lost a lot of important people, right?
No 2-2.
They got a tough schedule. It's going to be a very interesting year. UCF, who just lost their coach, I think that's Louisville's most important game of the year. I think it's three. They play Ole Miss, probably going to be a loss early.
Pretty hilarious that they opened the season against Ole Miss and then UCF, which could be disastrous.
That's just, it's dumb scheduling by Louisville. There's no other way to call it that. It's dumb scheduling. You don't need to do – you play Kentucky, you want to be aggressive and play one other Power 5 team, that's fine. You don't need to be playing – like, your other G5 team needs to be you need to guess on a MAC team and say, this is who we think is going to be a low-level MAC team, and then we'll play our FCS, or we're going to do a Sun Belt team.
Or Conference USA, yeah.
Don't play American teams, right?
Or make the American – yeah, you can't really do that. You could do the American team and Kentucky. You can't do Kentucky, Ole Miss, and the American team. Like, that's they're asking for that to end disastrously next year.
When they scheduled it, they weren't thinking this. But now that's the position you put yourself in. Now Ole Miss has got their act together with Kiffin. They're gonna have a top 25 team. UCF's gonna have one of the better quarterbacks in the country. And Kentucky is gonna have a team that's going to be pretty good, it looks like. That's your fault. Like, you control your schedule. Like, you have to think about those. Man. And they got a little too big for their britches when they got in the ACC.
Man, maybe that's why Satterfield was so desperate for an extension. Because he's like, man, we are going to get our asses kicked next year. This is going to get ugly.
Yeah, and that's another reason. He tried to play the extension card, extension leverage, and Tyra didn't take the bait.
How weird is it, too, that in all of the – like, Vince Tyra responds to every text message from a reporter. Does he not know that, like, you can just not respond? You don't have to give out a comment every time Bruce Feldman mentions Scott Satterfield in a job opening? Like, dude, lighten up, Vince. You don't need to call a press conference. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just can't help himself. He just can't.
He's learning on the job. I feel like it's kind of crazy that he picked to be the AD. Yeah, I still think it's crazy that's who they pick long term to be the athletic director.
Yeah.
He had no really experience in the field, but he's done it. I think he's done a good job.
Yeah, fine. Well, I want to talk about the other AD that really is just, man. Like, and I know you're very anti-Phil Fulmer, but Danny White, his replacement at Tennessee, really just I didn't watch him speak the first time, but at today's introductory press conference, I don't know if he's a Yankee or not, but he really comes across as a Yankee Doodle Dandy prick. I mean, just the cockiest SOB. And in his introductory press conference, I mean, this is a huge hire, and I could not believe some of the things that were coming out of his mouth. Like, does he not realize that he's in the SEC now and he's hiring a football coach? Like, that was what I found myself asking while watching all 45 minutes of that press conference today.
I got a kick out of him saying he never had a leak in his career. And he had two at Tennessee within the week.
I mean, what? Oh, gosh. I mean, this guy. And we're going to have to work on that. It's like, well, dude, who was the last guy that was talking about leaks? How did that work out for him?
Yeah. Like, good luck. Good luck with Tennessee and their 1,800 media companies.
Oh, man.
The football team.
Well, the thing like it that I thought was most – so Josh Heupel is going to be UCF's next coach. We can talk about the merits of him and all that sort of stuff. But the thing that I didn't understand about White was that he was very adamant on the usual talking points, but the usual talking points don't work here because he was your coach at your former school that you just came from.
Yeah.
So when you say that he was the first guy, he was the only guy that we offered for this job, like you're acting like that you didn't really do anything. Like it's completely counterintuitive. Like it
was a tough press conference for Danny White today. He got caught with his foot in his mouth a few times, saying that they vetted numerous candidates.
But he was the one guy for the job? What?
Yeah, and he didn't want to take UCF's coach. He didn't want to do that. I mean, it's pretty clear what happened. He just got turned down again by everybody. And he had a script. He wanted an offensive head coach, so – and he wanted offensive mind head coaching experience, unless it was Tony Elliott from Clemson. And so you just got down the list and there was Heupel. And then it got, I think, silly wise, they wanted to make a hire. There's no harm in really playing the string out with Kevin. You already had an interim in place, just letting him, you know, and a staff that you're already paying for, just let that ride out. And then, you know, have 9 months to get everything in order, and then you're ready to go, and you can vet candidates more, and you're going to have a bigger field to choose from because
it's not a lot of coaches late are, in the process.
Like, it's moved past that part of the schedule. Like they're on to the next season.
Right.
Spring ball's about to start places. It's just some coaches are just, they probably didn't listen to Tennessee because of that. And plus, they don't know what the sanctions are.
Well,
they're talking today like it's not going to be that big a deal, which I think there might be truth in that because on the front end, it seemed like they were just trying to get Pruitt out of there.
And but that was also,
that was the avenue to do it.
The thing that Mark Stoops wisely learned almost immediately that Joker Phillips never could grasp is like setting expectations is very important. And especially when you're dealing with a bunch of deranged lunatics that call themselves Vol Twitter. And not only was he, they were both, I think White called it a short-term problem. Heupel said that this is just a speed bump. It's like,
yeah, guys, they should not have done that.
Yeah, like you are really setting yourselves up to look like a bunch of idiots on your first day on the job. First day on the job. So I thought that was dumb. And then really of all of the dumb things that you could have possibly done, and I really applaud, I think it was a woman from WATE who asked about why some people in Vol Twitter were, I don't know if she used Vol Twitter, but some Vol fans were being angry. And he said, this was White's response when asked about some fans who were being negative. Some of you are awesome. Some of you are failing right now. Why would we be negative? It's like, wait, you really want to know? And I mean, one of my favorite tweets was that Tennessee ranked 64th in win percentage since Twitter launched. But like, you're really going to like, this is the first time people actually care to hear you talk. And you're going to say, y'all are failures. He called a bunch of his fans failures.
I think they do need some of that though. They needed a guy in there to tell them to like, just be blunt with them. But that, yeah. I don't think that was the way to do it.
And because here's the thing, like when we actually talk about the merits of Heupel, like there could be something to this.
Yeah, but, I could. Like, yeah.
But just the way that they went about this press conference, especially when the entire SEC network's all about you right now. There's no other coaching hires happening. You were the story in college football. You were the one dealing with a bunch of allegations, and it's a fire. And you are the ones that are supposed to be putting it out and moving forward. And I just think they did a terrible job of doing that. And I don't think this is coming from a place of wanting them to fail constantly. I think it's just objectively like, okay, well, of course the new Tennessee guy did not make things worse before he made things better, because that's what we've come to expect from Tennessee.
And it was on the heels of that tone deaf firing press conference they had.
They're on fire with these press conferences.
Tennessee's a unique place, man. And they've got a lot of stuff they need to figure out. And White is walking in here with some WWE swagger and bravado. Like, it almost seems like it's staged kind of thing.
Some Vince McMahon walking down the catwalk kind of, yeah.
No, there's definitely, and I think need a little bit of that. And I do like that White, he came from this, you know, athletic department background, which I think is good. But when you do a little more digging in on him, a lot of it was like this guy's king fundraiser, and that, like, Tennessee money's not a problem. Like, they can get money down there. Like, that is not an issue. It's structure. This is how we do certain things. This is that. This is how we set realistic expectations. I think that's part of the issue. Like, just start off the bat. They have to play Alabama and Georgia every year. Alabama and Georgia are on a different stratosphere, not just than Tennessee, everybody in college football. There's four teams up there, or maybe five if you want to throw LSU in there, that can really play with them on a talent basis. So you're 0-2 to start, right? I mean, right off the bat, because Alabama and Georgia aren't losing to very many teams. They're going to beat you 98% of the time with the talent they have on the roster. Florida has had their number for 20 years now. I think they've beaten Florida twice since 2001, or since 2000.
I think one was a Hail Mary. Or no, that was Georgia they beat on.
No, Florida beat them on a Hail Mary.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, Hail Mary. They're like, they just have their number, and they recruit at a higher level than Tennessee. So you're 0-3 right there, you know? And then it gets down to, like, Tennessee's expectation right now should be, we're shooting for third in the East. We get to third in the East, we're sitting at 8-4. We're going to maybe the Outback Bowl. Let's shoot for that baseline level. That's what we need to achieve. Once we achieve that, then we can rise up, raise our recruiting a little bit, and then go. Instead, they come out, shoot from the hip, and say they want to win championships, and which is what everybody wants to hear. But maybe that's not what they need to hear right now.
We're going to take a bite out of everyone's ass, is what they say after they go to that one.
They just can't help themselves. Yeah. They cannot help themselves. They're living in a small window. They're in, like, feels like 98. You forget before 96, 97, 98, 95, 96, 97, 98, when they had, I don't know, Peyton freaking Manning. Like, it wasn't like that. Tennessee wasn't on that level. They were a team that ranked in the teens. They won 7, 8, 9 games every year.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of their avenue where they were.
Solid with Johnny Majors, just year in, year out. They beat Kentucky.
Over time, it's become this thing where Tennessee is a top five program. This is what they've done. Like, yes, they were when General Nealon was there in the 1940s. Like, the game has changed in 18 trillion different ways. So, like, Tennessee needs to, like, I just think the expectations have just gotten too crazy because of that four or five year run they had there in the 90s. And when they lost Peyton Manning, they dipped back down with that with Fulmer. They were winning 8-9 games. And that's just kind of where they were. I think that needs to be their goal. And then if you can do that, then you can figure – then maybe that's when you take the next jump. If maybe the next hire, you can go get somebody a little bit bigger. But they just – they've got all kinds of issues. I mean, we've talked about Tennessee a lot here this offseason. I think it's going to be something we continue to talk about, but –
Yeah, it's kind of replaced Scott Frost, because Scott Frost, nobody's staying there. Nebraska is just, everybody's getting out of there while they can before the ship completely sinks. But Josh Heupel
has more hope than Nebraska, I think, because that move to the Big Ten, really, that absolutely, I think, killed Nebraska.
Yeah, yeah.
Killed their recruiting. From a culture
standpoint, yeah. Because that's all the teams they play.
They don't fit in. The fans hate everything now about that life. It's just they're in a much worse spot, where Tennessee, like, they just need a couple things to break their way, and they can be right back where they're really competitive and giving teams a difficult time. with because the talent they can accumulate just because of their
and they did that for a year or two with Butch Jones, where they were kind of in, like they've been on the edge of it, but they haven't taken over the top. And now with Heupel, they're getting it feels like a let's see if this kind of gimmick will work. And gimmick isn't the right word for what Heupel does, but I just, first off, there is going to be a little bit of hesitancy because of the last person that ran a spread out offense from UCF. Look where Scott Frost is now. So there's a little bit of like, well, is this going to work? Secondly, TJ made a very good point that the hire could be a great fit because he looks like a stereotypical doofy Tennessee head football coach. He's got a real dumb look about him. So he's going to have some real dumb faces. He's going to look really stupid in an enormous orange. Like those, what are those? They look like ponchos. They're like short sleeve shirts, but they're waterproof. He's totally
I've got one of those. Yeah.
A big orange one of those, and he's going to look like a big dumb idiot. But, you know, if Kiffin can get up and down the field at FAU, I mean, they scored a ton of points when Heupel was at Missouri. So he at least is familiar with the league. Maybe it does get him somewhere. Maybe.
It's two letters, QB. Like Kiffin last year worked because he inherited a top 100 recruit who he just was able to unleash last year. Like Matt Corral really came the reason with Ole Miss why everybody was prognosticating, we thought they had quarterback issues, but then Corral becomes this all as like he's gonna be first team all SEC this preseason.
Maybe
it's either him or JT Daniels.
It
should be Corral. Yeah. And so like with Tennessee, I just look at it, does he have the quarterback? Like Frost, you just mentioned it never had hadn't had the quarterback. Heupel, as his stock really took off was after Oklahoma fired him when he had Trevor Knight. They didn't have a quarterback. The next year, he didn't get to coach Baker Mayfield. Lincoln Riley comes in, inherits Baker Mayfield, and they take off. But he goes to Missouri, Drew Locke, quarterback in Missouri program history, him or Brad Smith, you can make the argument. And he really – Locke had great, deep accuracy, and that's really what this offense he has tapped into. He goes to UCF, gets Mackenzie Milton, and then they do a good job. I can't remember if it was him or Frost that recruited Dylan Gabriel, but he lands that kid, and he ended up being really good right away. And so when you go to Tennessee, it's just all about can he find the quarterback. If they struggle to find the quarterback, it's going to be tough. But if he finds the quarterback, they're going to have a chance. The reason I think I like this hire for Tennessee, that I can see it being successful, is – it's just something they've never done before. It's going all in on offense. Even when they hired Kiffin before, he had strict NFL background. It was very
pro
modern kind of offense. Everybody was kind of running that offense in the league. This is different. It's tapping in like the entertainment value. Like we may lose, but we're going to score 35, 38 points. And when you look at the East, they're going to be the only team, Nick, that's full out running up-tempo offense in the East. 100% gas on the pedal, no brakes. And so from that could give them an advantage over their opponents because it's something tricky that they have to deal with only one time a year, and they're the team utilizing it.
Yeah, I did the freshman that they had this year, Bailey, is it Harrison Bailey? Did he hit the portal?
No, but they have a kid coming in from Texas.
They got him to recruit. They got Hendon Hooker coming in.
Hooker and Bailey do not seem like fits for this offense to me. I would need to look at more Bailey tape to see how good he is throwing down the field. But he's kind of got a long line of delivery, it seems like. And in this offense, you need to get that ball out. I mean, it's a lot of RPO and quick, getting it all out quick and then throwing people open downfield. They got a kid coming in from Texas. I think it's Kadon Salter or something like that. Top 100 recruit. That's the guy to watch for, I think. If he can run this offense, he might be the guy, and then they might have something if he's good when he's young. Tennessee's got a talent exodus. We just talked about they got 20-something guys in the portal. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were their better players on the team last year. So they, and I mean, they're in for a tough little rebuild here, but and they need to, he needs to hit that quarterback, and they need to hit on a quarterback fast.
And he needs to figure out who his assistants are going to be, because like T. Martin's got a kid who's a top 100 player. That's going to be a senior next year, I think.
Did you see
the quarterback?
Yeah, you're right. Did you see Peerless Price's Twitter?
No, no, no. What did Peerless Price do?
He pretty much said, like, he just talked to T. Martin and that they're not keeping him kind of thing. And T. Martin was really upset.
Because in I could see you moving on from all the other assistants from that regime. T. Martin is one of those, like, probably should keep him around. Kind of like the...
Just for recruiting purposes, right?
Well, and kind of like what Harsin did, which, by the way, I always thought it was Harrison. I thought there was another I in there up until today. But Harsin got rid of that linebackers coach. Well, he was a dude's been at Auburn forever. And got rid of that guy who was Trevin Wallace's lead recruiter. And now, thanks, Harsin, because Kentucky could have gotten a top 50 recruit on signing day at a position of need. Like, they could have a
Auburn people were, some Auburn people were upset about that they didn't keep that guy.
So that's going to be huge for Heupel. And I mean, I just kind of mentioned the Wallace thing. That's could be enormous. I mean, like, it, we're not going to talk by the time that happens. National signing day, though, is less than a week away. By the time you're hearing this, it's next Wednesday, which I believe is February 3rd. And that just, I don't know how else to be like, hey, you just lost your best defensive player, but you got a top 50 recruit inside linebacker. Well, smack my ass and call me Shirley. Like, you can't dial it up any better. And just when we, I mean, hell, if Summerall does that again, I mean, you want to talk about some recruiting chops to pull the Josiah Hayes thing on Kiffin and then to be able to do this to Auburn and Georgia on signing day, that would it enormous, enormous if that can happen.
Yeah, he's the real deal, man. It's just, and then he would have two of the four-star prospects in the class. Summerall would, with him and Christian Lewis.
Yeah, I'm not sure how, like, I don't know how. I feel pretty good about it, Luckett, but I'm gonna have a much better feel on that, a much better read on that after this weekend. But as of right now, I for a second I was like, well, Kentucky's got a chance, but it, after this weekend, I'll have a good notion if it actually is going to happen or not, because I kind of think that it's looking in that direction. And if it does, you know, like, we're not going to be able to toot that the horns enough for a recruiting win. So
only time will tell, my friend.
Yeah, only time will tell. Are there any other things that we've missed on? Like, I know we had, do we have anybody go in the portal? Oh, Khalil Branham went to the portal. That was a surprise, but
did he go in the portal?
No, he didn't go in the portal. He's just not with the team anymore. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of that, but at least you've got umpteen other receivers. You know, I really love Branham's. He was a different kind of kid, man.
Yeah. They, Nick, I ran the numbers. I think I'm going to write a post on this weekend, but I'll give you all a little teaser right now.
You gave us a teaser of one you wrote this week about that winning window that I was a big fan of.
I did. Okay. Now I got Kentucky. Let me count right quick. 84, 85, 86. I got them at 87 scholarships. Now, if Wallace comes in or they land a transfer to, those aren't counted. So no, there's still, you know, yeah, there's still, there's some cuts. They're probably not as many as I maybe thought they would have to get, but there's probably going to be three or four. They'd still probably need three or four more people to enter that portal.
Yep.
No, so that's something to watch for. And they've got 16 scholarship receivers right now. It was 17 before Branham entered. 16's a lot.
Yeah, you don't need that many. Especially
there's not. I don't know if there's 16 seats in Boo Knight's position room.
That one's one of the bigger ones. I think they've got four rows in there.
Yeah, so that one, that's one to keep an eye on. I think that position group.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, I mean, Stoops mentioned in that interview about Tay-Tay Crooms. He wanted to see him step up. Yeah. It might be a, hey, you got a spring. Step up. Go do your thing, man. So we'll wait and see. Like, before we go, I want to ask you a question that I think is a very legitimate question. Who wins more games, this year's Kentucky basketball team or next year's Kentucky football team? Right now, Cal's team is 5-10. With
I think they got some winnable games coming up on that back end of the SEC slate.
Yeah, they don't have any coming up right away. But
they got a tough stretch right here, but back in February, they got some wins baked in there.
But is there such thing as a baked in win for this Kentucky team?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And if you're they're playing, as long as they play close, some of these games are going to start bouncing their way, I feel like.
Yeah, they got to. They got to. But there is a thought where you're like, can Kentucky, because if we count a football bowl game, like we'll dream big and say 11 games. Can the Kentucky basketball team win 11 games this year? Because they probably won't do NCAA tournament. You don't know what's going to happen with the SEC tournament.
Let's go to KenPom's projections right now.
Oh, man, I'm sure.
He's got down at 10-15 is the projection. So 5-5 the rest of the way.
Oh, I'm telling you, it's a question that has more validity than it should.
Yeah, it's one of those years, man. People are going to be excited for spring football.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Expected.
They certainly are. They certainly are. Well, look, this has been fun. Didn't expect us to have this much to talk about. Thanks for the schedule release party, folks. Even though it was, 45 minutes, this is a long show. Probably too long. Longer than it needed to be. But still, it was a good time. It's going to be – that month of October is going to be a blast.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Those 2 weeks in Lexington, Luckett, you win in September. The juice in the atmosphere going into that Florida game and the juice going into the LSU game, even if things don't go your way. I mean, there's just – especially if you get to passing the ball, like you get Bo Allen, who gets some touchdowns under his belt, Wandale breaking some people off. Like you can get – you can talk yourself into some high hopes with the schedule.
There could be strong 2007 vibes where they had Florida and LSU back-to-back.
Oh, yeah.
It was flip-flop, though.
Right, but right.
That time in Lexington, I mean, it was crazy.
Dude, I was 16 and on top of a car with a sledgehammer before a game.
I don't need to hear anymore. That's enough of the story.
Exactly. Bring it back. I will happily get on top of a car and hit it with a sledgehammer in October this fall again. Happily do it again. Let's run it back.
I think the schedule breaks where that's going to be a real possibility. Well, there's really going to be some buzz building going into those 2 weeks.
Oh, man. It'll be here before you know it.
I've talked about the window is here. And if Florida or Georgia implodes, which, it's college football, it could happen. There's an opportunity there.
Wait, Dan Mullen imploding? Never seen that before.
He just lost his offensive coordinator today, too. Yeah,
Grantham still hanging around, too?
Grantham by thread. It'd be nice to get one more on Grantham and just open it up one more time before he gets out of there.
Oh, man. And to run it back like that 2016 Louisville game, just like – first play of the game.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be great.
And then see him rage quit on the sidelines.
Like Pruitt from Brumball.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, let's get out of here. This has been fun, though. Enjoy the snow, everybody. Enjoy the Super Bowl. It's right around the corner.
We'll have next week talk about Super Bowl.
We'll talk plenty about it. Until then, go Cats and go Kroger.